What's up, everyone, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Bonus Point Podcast brought to you by Macro Butter, Whale Bird Kombucha, and Osteo Strong LA. Super Rugby AU has 1 week in the books. Super Rugby Aotearoa begins this week, and the MLR is just a few weeks away. So we're super excited for it, but I'm even more excited to get stuck into the pod today. So with that in mind, I want to welcome in the boys again, James Tesserero and Tavita Holofia, aka Novel Capote. How are we doing, fellas? Welcome back into the show. Good to have you guys on.
Hello. Welcome. Everyone. Hello, James. What a great week in Super Rugby Australia.
Yeah, well, mate, it's footy on the TV and happy days. All's right with the world.
100%.
Yeah. I think that's going to be even better when the Super Rugby Aotearoa stuff starts up. I'm going to be super stoked. I've been talking about it all week, getting the guys to either get Stan or Rugby Pass or something like that to watch it. So, yeah, super excited. But, yeah, let's just get stuck into it and talk about it. Plenty to chat about. As usual, I want to start off with Super Rugby AU because that was the only live rugby that got started. But before we get to the gameplay, I want to talk to you guys about our first look at Stan Sport, who are now the TV providers for Super Rugby AU this year. James, I'll come to you first. What were your thoughts on the presentation Stan Sport provided?
It looked like it was pre-season for Stan also. There are a few miscues and miscommunications. But the quality and the production value and the I've got the subscription with Super HD and I felt like I was there on the field after tries when they were kind of going out onto the field with cameras and some of the features of the broadcast were some of the best I've seen in rugby, but then there were some miscues and miscommunications. We let them down a bit.
Okay, so yeah, so they've got a bit of stuff they can tweak, but yeah, week one that sounds like more positive than negative, so that's good. Hala, I know you had some reservations when it came to the commentary group. What was your thought of Stan's first broadcast?
Look, I'm the first to admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong. You guys alluded to me. Look, what Michael Chica bought as a commentator and as a former coach was awesome. I love the breakdown. I love where they're heading. I agree with James. I thought it was the best coverage of the field I've seen ever for rugby, and you know, minus the technical difficulties, I had a lot of. I really enjoyed it, and watching it on a 70-inch high definition TV, like James said,
me too.
It was great. Probably not so good for the time difference, but you know, who needs to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Man, you guys are rubbing it in. I've only got a 50-inch, and you guys got the 70 inches. There you go. Yeah, way to kill it. Okay, I need. I've been telling the missus that I need to invest in a bigger TV, so hopefully I'll be able to bring her. Well, let's talk about the gameplay. There were two very different scores over the weekend, and the first match I want to talk about was the one with the biggest margin, and that was the Reds versus the Waratahs. So I do apologize, James. This one's going to be a bit of a tough one for you because of the margin. I know how much you love your Tars, but there shouldn't be any surprise that the Reds were going to come back really strong this season, especially after some of the Wallabies experience that some of the boys got and the marquee players they got experience. So there's a lot of questions in the air about the Waratahs. The Waratahs squad, who lost 41-7 over the weekend, now have the youngest squad, I believe, in the competition after losing experienced players like Michael Hooper overseas. So, Hala, I'll come to you first. Was this more Reds winning or Tars losing?
No, it was Reds winning. You know, the Reds' first 25 minutes is probably the best rugby that they've played in the last 4 years, or at least up there with some of their three, four best games. You know, just like how the Reds were a few years ago, a young squad, that's where New South Wales and Waratahs are now. And so what you saw was a team that have played together, that have come through the ranks, and they just clicked. And once that happens, they would beat any team on that first 25 minutes was some of the best rugby I've ever seen.
Yeah. In my opinion, the Tars did show some promise, although the final score painted a pretty bleak picture. A good example was that at the moment the red card was issued, the score remained 21-7 for the Tars didn't concede 1 point for a whole 20-minute block. And I will admit that's pretty impressive when you think about it. I will say their scrum wasn't too consistent, in my opinion. I think their lineout could have definitely used some more consistency, but that's just my opinion. I think when you look at it overall, they've got some promise. So, James, when you look at the Tars from last week's game, what do the Tars need to focus on to improve?
Firstly, I agree with Huller's point that this is a kind of young, inexperienced team, the same way the Reds were 2 years ago. So the first thing is to try to look at this with optimism and look at it as an opportunity. And we're blooding and developing a heap of young kids who clearly aren't ready to compete at the top level at Super Rugby yet, but are some of the best young players in the country. In terms of like where to from next week, there's pretty much everything needs to be reviewed and everything needs to be better. And things like scrum and line out are usually not quick fixes and aren't usually something you can turn around and fix in 6 days. The scrum problems were significant, and I think they'll probably struggle most of the season at the set piece. They lost a few of their lineouts at key times when they really needed to secure ball and build possession. And then just the attack looked like there was no front foot ball, no momentum. So anytime the ball went to first receiver, poor Will Harrison had nothing but numbers in front of him.
Yeah.
It was kind of, he had a defensive overload pretty much every time he got first receiver ball, and he just looked up and there was just red bodies in front of him. And it all kind of starts with set piece and then making sure your forwards are bending the line. That's the bare minimum.
Yeah. I think like one thing that was a big, probably a bigger wake-up call for the Waratahs was the Reds starting a relatively younger front row. And they were very, very dominant. And I dare say they were more dominant than when your Wallaby players have come on, you know, in that Nella Tupou came on in that second half. So that for the Waratahs, I was actually quite shocked at scrum time. You know, I thought, oh, this is where it'll be a good contest for both forward packs, given the relative age and the squad that sort of – the forward squad, at least, that the Reds had. I was shocked at that. And I agree with James.
Yeah, it's always good to have versatility in the scrum. It's great when you've got a young pack that's holding their own, and then you can bring on Wallabies off the bench. That's always a plus. Yeah. But let's bounce right back to you, James. Let's talk about the Queensland Reds now. So, who were you most impressed with in this matchup? They had a lot of talented players, a lot of good performances. Who stood out the most for you?
I thought the two best for, probably the three best for the Reds was Paisami in the centres, who's just kind of gone from strength to strength. Harry Wilson, every touch, he would bend the line. And for a number eight, that's a very important quality. And then Dalgunu on the wing looked like he had spiders on him every time he touched the ball. And then James O'Connor is kind of underplaying his hand. He's not... a lot of people probably wouldn't know he's on the field, but if you watch it and look for subtleties, he's very good at directing, steering the attack around, and 100%. Getting the ball wide early to Paisami. So they've got a lot going for them.
Was he was captaining on the weekend, wasn't he? And that was his first time captaining, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I watched the press conference afterwards as well, and Brad Thorne, he sounded like a – well, obviously he's the coach, but he sounded like a proud father. He was sitting there. He was so proud of James O'Connor and being able to captain his state. But I think it's because obviously he's had some issues in the past. He's had some things he's had to grow from and overcome and grow up. So I think you nail on the head, James. I think he's grown a lot as a player, and he's using his experience to his advantage. And he definitely is underplaying his hand because he could run amok with all these guys. But Huller, you're obviously picking the Reds to not only win Super Rugby AU but to win the whole Trans-Tasman comp. So does this substantial victory put both conferences on notice, or is it too early to tell?
No, not really, because I mean then the Reds haven't experienced they haven't really gone through that successful phase and remaining humble too. I mean, what succeeded that first 25 was a very silly 30 minutes where they could have capitalized a lot more and they didn't. They rushed. They were trying to overplay, if anything. You know, just letting things slip. Offloads that didn't need to be offloaded, you know. So I think, like, they're going to mature through the AU series. But I think what will happen is by the end of the AU series, when they play these Kiwi teams, I think, you know, James O'Connor is going to be very comfortable with how that connection between him and Bisami. And I haven't been a big fan of Hamish Stewart, but relieving Hamish Stewart of that playmaker role really let him inject himself in the game when he needed to, which I really liked, because the O'Connor-Bisami connection, you could see that they're really drifting and trying. If O'Connor passed it, they were drifting. And Hamish Stewart, I thought, had a really good game because he injected himself at the right time, made those breaks, made tackles when they needed to be made, and was all round all over the park. So it'd be interesting to see this back line develop and mature through this Australian series. I'm quite excited. And I actually, you know, you look at the bench and you're thinking like, well, okay, cool. You've got Sarovi coming in for Tate McDermott. You know, Vunivalu's making his debut this week.
Oh, I'm excited for that. Oh,
yeah, man. And like Bryce Hegarty. So it's going to be interesting because I think there's a lot in the arsenal. And like James said, James O'Connor is underplaying his hand. So when he starts getting that confidence and a lot more, and now he's going to play you in two minds, I can't see them being touched. But it's too early to tell. It's only game one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think when I was looking at the stats as well, when you compare defensively, the Waratahs and the Reds, they were actually pretty even. The tackles were about the same. The missed tackles were about the same. Turnovers won basically identical. So I think defensively, the Waratahs still have a lot to offer. There's obviously some things that they can improve on. But yeah, I think once the Reds get rolling and they start just tweaking a little thing here and there, I think they're going to be off to the races. But we'll talk about the next match, which is the Force and the Brumbies. And I was very happy with this matchup. It was really great to watch. Fans in Perth, especially, because they had to wait, what was it? I think it was 1,313 days between Super Rugby matches. So you could see that there was a great turnout to watch the match. The Force were quick to get points on the board, but it was the reigning champions that ended up walking away with the victory. So I liked what I saw from the Force. They possess a lot of wisdom and experience, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, considering they have a lot of elder statesmen. I'm not 100% sold on them yet, but I still think they show promise. Hala, what were your thoughts about the Force on the weekend?
Yeah, look, I think the one thing that I took away from it is their forward pack are definitely going to be super competitive. I honestly don't think that they're lacking anything substantial. I just think their backline doesn't have that X factor there. I think they've got a lot of, you've got John O'Lance, who can really read play really well, direct traffic. But I just think, and even with Richie Kahui, they just don't have that little something that can just do something to get them over that line, whether it's offensive or defensive. So I think they're definitely going to be competitive. I was rooting for the Force. I really was, but the Brumbies just had too much class, and patience was the big one. The Brumbies really, I thought they controlled the ball when they had it, when they needed to at the right times, and when they needed to push the play, they pushed the play. And again, that just comes with that experience that you've got in that back line.
So what I'm hearing is you're saying that they need a time machine. They need to take it back 10 years. So that way all their players are in prime position for their X factor. And then the back line will be the best. Okay, I hear you loud and clear.
I hear Matt Giddo's a free agent. Just get him back and watch what happens.
Man. That would be phenomenal if you insert him in that. Oh, mate. Man. The ratings would go through the roof.
Anywhere man, Matt Giddo goes, a premiership's coming. Mark my words.
I can't disagree with that. And that pains me to say, because I know he's put a lot of bad things against All Blacks. So it's I got to pay that. But James, we'll talk to you about the Force as well. Do you think they can be contenders for this year's title with the team that they have, or are teams like the Reds and the Brumbies in a class of their own?
I think the Reds and the Brumbies seem to be first and second, and Daylight third. There's a bit of separation there. Mm-hmm. I think the Force will have some wins this year. Mm-hmm. I think you look at what an experienced side they have. When they play against the side of Waratah 21-year-olds, there are big advantages to having Kearney, Kahui, Thrush, John O'Lance, Kurundrani, all in the same side. There's a case to be made that there's maybe too much age and experience to be to be real competitors. But I think they'll cause, in terms of match management and experience, they'll cause the Waratahs all sorts of trouble. And I reckon they could probably beat the Waratahs based on what we see. And we haven't seen the Rebels roll out yet. So I think they'll be middle to low table, but I think they'll be competitive in every match.
I think watching the game on the weekend too, like just touching on Kurunjani, like I said, they weren't beaten by it or outsmarted. Do you know what I mean? They just lacked that. You know, Lolasia had a few good moments. But Kurunjani, because defensively he's always been a king. He's an axe man. And just seeing him read that, like you saw him just talking and chatting, and he's dropped some kilos, and he's actually looking quite good.
He's looking a bit leaner. He's looking like he's able to actually catch some people now.
Yeah. Come on, man. I'm supposed to be the harsh one here, not you. But I just think, like, you know, that touching on James's point, that maturity that'll come through when they go and play the Waratahs is going to shine. And I dare say, like, it'll be interesting to see the Rebels this week. But, you know, Force could definitely have a say to finish third in the conference, which would be really cool. But, you know, I suppose we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Kurunjani, actually, with his defense, because when he was playing against Simone and Ikitau, he was able to hold them up both at the same time in a lot of their set piece and a lot of their broken play. So he's still got it. I think he's a great addition to the Force, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. But the Brumbies have come out of preseason looking really good. And although it was a close game, the Brumbies are showing some combinations. Like I said, the 12 and 13 combos now that Kurunjani is out of the mix. I think they will challenge a lot of teams with certain combinations. Simone and Ikitau, like I said, may have some trouble playing the Reds because of the dominance that Paisami is showing and whoever they insert into that 13 position. But Huller, I'll come back to you. Who did you like over the weekend for the Brumbies?
You know, I'm going to be pretty honest. I thought the team performed adequately. That's about it. I don't think anyone really stood out. Dude, this is typical Brumbies though. This is how they start their season. You know, everyone, all of that 23, they all know where they need to be for game one, and they just build and they build and they build. So no one really stood out. It was just a matter of collectively the team came out and did their thing. Which you know, that's what you want, I suppose, really. But I don't think, like, for me personally, I didn't see anyone that was, you know, standing out, you know, really well. If anything, I like Lolasia's gameplay. I think he needs to have a big season this year. I think his confidence got shot last year.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I also think that comes from just that inexperience too. So, you know, another season under his belt, some rep footy. I'd like to see Lolasia in that prime when he was in his 20s and just make everyone in international rugby in that 20s level look silly. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I think we're going to see that this year from him.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he doesn't end up with another injury, so he can have a full season under his belt. I think he can definitely rip in. But James, the Brumbies go up against your Tars this weekend. What do you expect from this matchup now that round one is in the books?
I think based on what we saw, I think the Brumbies will be too strong and the Tars will probably struggle. I disagree with Huller. I had probably three standout players for the Brumbies. I thought Caden Neville, the lock, was the best player on the field. And as a Wallabies fan, I thought that was a huge relief because there's big holes at Wallabies lock.
Did he come through the Sydney system?
I think he was with the Rebels last year.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
He might already have a Wallabies cap.
Right. Oh, really?
Okay. I think so, yeah. But he was outstanding, and he was just all over the park. I thought Len Ikitau, it's quite often that as an outside center, you might only get four touches a game. And he probably only got four touches a game, but two of them were line breaks that led to tries or offloads that led to tries. And I feel like he broke that game open with a couple of moments. Mm-hmm. And then I thought Nick White controlled very, very well, especially in the first half. And he put he put Lolasita through for that try.
That pass was great. Yeah, the way he was just able to take that 1-2 step and just put it in the perfect spot. Oh man.
Yeah.
Still take so McDermott for the Wallabies nine squad.
So mate, I think the Brumbies are looking very settled, and combinations make a big difference. The Reds and the Brumbies have got the most continuity over the last couple of seasons, and it'll be no surprise if they start the season much stronger than the teams that are throwing different combinations together.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Do you think Valentini at 8 would be a good option?
Not. Yeah. I think Samu fills the role too well. Maybe if you had to shift him, if you had to take someone off and you had to put him into 8, but I personally think you wouldn't want to put anyone except Samu in their 8 jersey.
Yeah, like I like Samu at 8. I just I want him to play consistent Wallabies, and I can't see him consistently playing 8 for the Wallabies.
Why not?
So you can play Samu at 6 and still have him attacking on the edge.
At the edge,
And put Valentini at 8 and have him wrecking through the middle.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. 6 and 8. As long as you got your balance across the back row, it doesn't really matter what numbers.
Yeah, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, 100%. Just like seeing Samu, you know, on those edges, I'd rather see him sort of in that middle, because I just think on ball too. He's just insane. Like, he's one of the best on-ball guys in the country. So
I'll give you that 100%. As soon as he gets an opportunity, he freaking crushes it, man. Like, he's open field or even just trying to find his spot.
100%.
He's incredible.
And he's handsome, so I just want to see him on the TV screen more.
All right. Before Hala keeps fretting about it.
Hey, Petey.
Oh my god. Okay, we're gonna rotate from this froth test, and we're gonna talk about Super Rugby Aotearoa. So over the weekend, we saw some preseason matchups, and although it's good to see New Zealand rugby back in action, I don't want to talk too much about the actual games because we have all season to talk about it. The thing I want to talk about is the new laws and the strategy that comes with that. So we spoke about it briefly last week about how the Super Rugby Aotearoa introduced some of the same laws as Super Rugby AU did last season. The most interesting one, in my opinion, for the New Zealand game specifically is going to be the goal line dropout. So for those who aren't familiar with the goal line dropout, this will occur when one of three things happens. So an attacking player carrying the ball is held up in goal. If the attacking player knocks the ball in goal area, or when the attacking kick, other than a penalty or drop goal attempt, is grounded by the defending team in the in goal area. So this law has a lot of people debating about what the best way is to attack. So obviously in rugby, there's no situation that is the same. But I wanted to share some stats with you guys and pick your brains a little bit, because we're all coaches and we're all rugby enthusiasts. We want to see how we attack. Over the weekend, I watched the Highlanders play the Hurricanes and in the preseason match. And I saw the ball in play for the first half. It was over 24 minutes. So in a regular game last year, most of the matches struggled to get close to 20. So another interesting stat was the way the teams attacked or gained territory. So, for example, last season, the Chiefs were at the bottom of the table, and they also were the team that kicked the least for territory in the competition. Just over the Bombay Hills, though, the Blues last season, they kicked the most in the competition, and they turned up the heat with their defensive pressure and aerial defense, and then ended up almost tied for the number one spot. Arguably, they could have ended up number one. So, James, I'll want to come to you first, because I want to hear thoughts on this. What's going to be more important with these new laws? A strong kicking game, encouraging territory and mistakes to occur, or a strong ball and hand game to build phases? What would you say?
I think what we'll probably see is some kind of rugby league style strategies for the attacking teams inside the 22, where kind of you can do a short kick into the end goal, and if you get it wrong and they ground it, you get the ball back from a 22 dropout, from a goal line dropout as opposed to a 22 dropout. So that's an incentive for those little rugby league style contestable kicks or grubber kicks through. That will make things interesting, and that'll probably keep the defense in two minds and it will probably cause the defense to drop at least one or three of their back three. So at the moment, every goal line defense has 15 guys on the line. But if you have to defend against the kick, you're dropping your fullback and you're probably dropping a blind winger, which makes 15 on 13 and should theoretically advantage the attack. And then some of the other restarts, kind of kicking the ball back to the other team from a goal line dropout, gives the attack a good platform for some unstructured attack. And the more of that and the less of scrums we see, in theory, there should be more ball in play.
Okay. Hala, have you got anything to add to that? What are your thoughts on this new law?
No, I totally agree. And I'm all for it. Look, at first I was a little bit, I think it's a little bit unfair that the attacking team don't get a 5 meter scrum, which is your best possible attacking element. But having said that, I think that we're going to see less time repacking scrums and more time ball and play. And essentially that's all we want as rugby fans.
Yeah. I was listening to a bit of Tony Brown, who's now the new head coach for the Highlanders. He lives for that crap. Like he's the guy who's sitting in there with his notebook, and he never wanted to be a head coach. He always thought that he was better suited in that attacking mindset or creating these master plays. With his little notepad, but he's the one person where he sits there and goes, as long as ball is in play for as much as possible, it promotes so much for the game. So I'm so for this, so happy for this law. It's going to be great to see what potential players can do with this to their advantage and just go from there. But yeah, no, that's going
to
be awesome.
You know what? The best thing is in regards to it being similar to rugby league, it's again changing the dynamic of the winger. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, like you said, we're going to see more one-on-one action under the high ball in that 22, which I think is like, that's awesome. So I'm really looking forward to it, to see how it changes team selection processes too. Because let's be honest, you can sort of get away with not being a big jumper on the wing in union opposed to league. Like in league, you really do need to be able to be under that high ball.
So it's going to be to have those Israel Folau hops.
Well, here's the thing. You think about it. You have an Israel Folau versus like a Nehem Milner-Scudder a couple of years ago. You're taking Israel Folau every day of the week, right? So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. And I think those rugby league converts, it suits them very well.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely going to be a good one. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Well, okay. Yeah, I'm just super excited to see it back. I've obviously got my Chiefs shirt on. I'm excited. Chiefs have still got one more week until we get to see them live in action, but it's going to be some great stuff.
Which means they can't lose.
Yeah, if only you were that easy. Oh, man. Okay. Well, before we get into our bonus point segment, we're going to say goodbye to James. I know you're a busy man, and we're going to get through to a froth session of Dan Carter because of our bonus point session. And I understand that it will probably bring up some bad memories for you, mate. So I'm going to let you. Yeah. So I don't what's PTSD? I don't want to trigger any of that stuff. So yeah, we'll say goodbye, mate. We'll see you next week.
See you, James. See you next week, bud.
We'll talk soon, brother.
Pleasure, guys. All the best.
All right. Thanks for it. See ya. Okay. Well, Hala. So this is going to be a topic that we are going to love to talk about, but it's called the bonus point for a reason. This week, it's a tough topic though. The Kiwi fans, We're heartbroken because Dan Carter has now officially announced his retirement to professional rugby. DC was arguably the best fly half in the game and one of the greatest rugby players to ever pull on a jersey, in my opinion. His accolades represent that, as he's a multiple IRB World Rugby Player of the Year, multiple World Cup winner, multiple Super Rugby champion. He won titles when he went overseas with Racing and Cobeco. The list goes on and on. I could go on all day. But although I would have liked to see him in the MLR come and play a season over here just to provide that experience, get that exposure, his career will go down as one of the greatest in my opinion. So with that in mind, I want to talk about our favorite Dan Carter moments. We all have them. It's going to be interesting. So I'm going to start off the conversation on this one because I have many moments. I tried to pick them, but I was just in awe of Carter's career, but there are two that always stick in my brain. Whenever someone says Dan Carter, whenever I think of him, they always pop up. The first one was when he was playing for the Crusaders against the Highlanders and he was kicking for a conversion. I think you know the one I'm talking about, Huller.
Oh.
I don't know if this guy was accounting for the wind or if he was just trying to show off to the people in the sidelines that he can curve a ball in a ridiculous fashion, but he ended up kicking the ball 10 meters across the goalpost. It looked like it had a friggin' magnet on it, and then it ended up right dead center in the middle of it. And even the commentators, I think Justin Marshall and I think Nisbo were sitting there going, what just happened? That doesn't make any sense. Like, it just didn't. But he's just a marksman when it comes to that kind of stuff. It's crazy.
I believe they in that video they just laughed. They didn't know they didn't know what they just saw. They're just like,
yeah,
what just happened?
Yeah, I would say it was nuts.
That kick. We'll never see it again. We'll never see that type of kick again.
I don't think so. Like it's the only thing I think that will be a comparison to that type of kick. The way I see it curve is when I see like Jonathan Thurston play in rugby league, where he does that, just that crazy overarching kick where it somehow just magically comes back into the middle. But yeah, it was, oh man, every time I think of Dan Carter, he's just a marksman. But I'll save my second moment for the last. What was one of your favorite Dan Carter moments?
The Irish line, British and Irish Lions tour. He was at 10, Munga was at 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was it was the second game, I think. And they just reeked, like, it was just like, okay, whoa. And Brian O'Driscoll's playing, you know, like, this isn't a
win. They weren't playing against scrubs, yeah.
No. And it was just, it got to the point where there was this, so Dan Carter, he dummies. He gets the ball and he's running this stupid, awkward, like sideways run that he does. And he's like, yeah, dummy's on the inside. And then he just does this, like, as he does this dummy, and then he just sort of like does this little shimmy. And for some reason, the defense just stopped. And I was like, what are you doing? And he just cuts through. Then the winger has to come across, the fullback has to come across, and he just pops it to Umanga, and Umanga's got his fist out already. Like, yeah, I'm going to score this. And it's like, bro, you still got 30 meters to run, G. And he's just like, I got it.
He's like, no, I've got Dan Carter. Yeah, I'm fine.
And Dan Carter's inside him, and he's just laughing. Like, they're just looking at each other, smiling and laughing. I was like, that's insulting, guys.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's one of the only people that can make a British and Irish Lions backline pause and go, what the crap? What do we do? Like someone who's just smoked a fat blunt and they just in space cadet. Okay. So my other Dan Carter moment, it isn't a certain player or a certain kick, but it's a player that he played with every time and when I saw them with the ball. So I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. Every time these guys played a test match together, I couldn't not look at the screen. So Carter's played with a lot of great 12s and 13s. You've got Sonny Bill, you've got Umanga, you got Conrad Smith, the list goes on and on. But
Adatini.
Yep, great. But Carter and Luke McAllister.
Oh,
when they played together for the All Blacks.
10-12.
Oh, like those haircuts, greatest, like yeah, the Dax wax. Oh man.
Greatest looking combo of all time.
Like if you put those two on a billboard, I don't think there's a product they couldn't sell. Like, I remember walking through Auckland and I saw Dan Carter. He was butt naked, but in a pair of undies. And that's what he was advertising. He was on a big billboard in Auckland. I was sitting there going, yeah, okay, I'm buying those undies. Yeah, I want to look like Dan Carter.
Oh, man. You know, the best part of that combination is you had, this is how they worked. They both started at 12. Both played 10 for club.
Mm-hmm.
So they were so interchangeable. And then when one went first receiver, one went second, it was a different to how it was swapped. They didn't play the same game, but they knew each other's game so well that they were that interchangeable. And here's the problem. You've got one who's the direct guy in Luke McAllister.
Mm.
And then you've got Dan Carter, who's like somehow can run and step 3 meters either side of you, and you're like, So, you know, if you're defending that, you have no idea what to do. They were beautiful, man.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. Any final moments that you can think of, or is it just...
Dude, here's what he's not known for, and he should be. His charge downs, bro. Man, like, at least one a game. He would... And it's just like, you just watch him, and you're like... He'd kick the ball, deliberately keep it in play, and charge the ball down. It was the most astounding thing, and I was just like, it goes to show, though, that's the superior athlete and the mindset he was. Like, I'm deliberately not going to kick this out.
Yeah.
I'm going to charge the ball down.
Very methodical, yeah.
He 100%, he was such a cutthroat athlete. And what he could do with that ball in hand or foot was so great. But it's those little one percenters, man, that's why he's going to go down as the greatest fly half of all time. And if not the greatest, one of the greatest rugby players of all time, because that's a mental game that he's playing with himself. And, you know, those 1%ers, not everyone does them. That's that Michael Jordan, Mamba, Kobe Bryant mentality, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I think if you could, like, I hate that people do this, like the comparisons and everything like that, especially with your mate LaFlop James and Michael Jordan. But I hate when the comparisons come. But if you would compare anyone to a Michael Jordan, it would be Dan Carter.
It's Dan Carter, 100%, yeah. Hands down. And yeah, it'll be a very long while, even though New Zealand rugby churn out great players, especially 10s, it's going to be a very long time till we see someone like Dan Carter again.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. Well, Dan, you will be missed. Congratulations on an amazing career. Enjoy retirement, mate. I know you're not done with rugby. You're probably going to step into a role, maybe commentary, something like that. But yeah, he's going to be
Steinlager's official beer drinker.
Of course he will. Yeah, you'll see him in 10 years, and his amazing physique will just go out. He'll just have a massive beer belly. And I was like, hey, you can't argue with him. He looked like a pretty boy 10 years ago. He still looks like a pretty boy with a beer gut. So it's going to be all good.
Got those pretty, pretty brown eyes, bro.
Right. Well, we will be back next week giving you the breakdowns, the updates, and some great banter. Super excited for that. Everyone tune into the rugby this weekend, and we will see you soon.
See you later, guys. Have a great week. Yeah.